Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Zinathi Guma. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Willem Oldewager from Nitrogen Fund Managers and independent analyst Ashraf Mohammed. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks, gentlemen, for joining us. The rebound that we've seen in the markets recently, starting with you, Ashraf, would it be too early to say that the markets have found a bottom?
I think we can say that we are near a bottom. I expect some volatility going forward. So we could come down and retest the levels we saw 2 weeks ago. But, you know, it's going to take another significant event to take out those levels that we saw 2 weeks ago. So it either means that the recession is a lot deeper than expected, or that interest rates go a lot higher than the 2%, 2.5% that's baked into US Treasuries right now. And I don't anticipate either of those events occurring.
Okay, Ashraf saying that we might be near a bottom. Willem, how about you? I mean, do you think that the rebound that we've seen is setting up the markets for maybe another stampede to the exit door in the not-so-distant future?
Yeah, I'm a little bit less bullish. I think I agree that we could be nearer a bottom just because the Fed plans on being done with tapering by the end of the year, but that's still 6 months away. That coupled with the fact that even though markets have reacted very positively, very little has happened in the commodity space or in supply chains or in the chip shortage to actually sort of relieve pressure. So I think consumers will stay constrained. And I think even though the outlook might be better than it was 2 weeks ago, I still think the basic sort of formula behind the market does indicate that if the Fed rates hikes, it still needs to lower sort of present values. And they're going to keep hiking at least sort of 2-3 more meetings. So maybe closer than we were 2 weeks ago, but I think I'd wait closer to the end of the year before calling it a bottom.
Yeah. All right. We have seen quite a mixed sentiment in the US and European markets, but not in our local markets. We did see that big booster being provided by Naspers and Prosus. And there's a question from a viewer. Could the panel please explain the following? So that's what happened today. Naspers and Prosus announced an open-ended share repurchase program funded by selling 10-cent shares to buy Naspers and Prosus. So I guess just a basic rundown of what that will entail, Ashraf.
So effectively what's going to happen is there are no restrictions on how many shares Naspers Prosus can sell. The management's been under significant pressure to reduce the discount to NAV, and they now believe that selling into the strength when it comes to the 10-cent share price will allow them to unlock value through share repurchases. In many respects, this is what most companies do, although they're restricted to 10% of the issued share capital with share repurchases. But, you know, this is not entirely the best use of capital for management. Effectively, management should be looking at new opportunities, but they, by doing what they are, they're saying that you know, we cannot find better returns except to buy back our shares.
I mean, there have been you know, previous moves to try and close that discount. Willem, how confident are you that this will actually work this time around?
I'm fully confident. I think it's taken a very long time for management to admit that the solution is sort of in front of them, and it's not buying new companies. It's not complicating the structure with a listing in Amsterdam. It's not giving us multi-choice shares. The ultimate truth is that if your discount, where Naspers was 2 weeks ago, is 67%, you need to find an investment that will yield you 200% in a year to be better than buying your own shares. So ultimately, I think this is the solution. And the way management communicated it on the call this afternoon was very clear. They will keep on doing the switch until the discount is narrow. And just looking at the current mechanics of the trade, the rump is trading negatively. So if you take out their Tencent holdings, the rest of the assets don't have any value. They detract value, which means if they keep on selling, they don't even have to sell all of their Tencent and they'll get to a 0% discount. And that's what they intend to doing. So they didn't allude to which level they think is fair, but they will keep on endeavoring to actually this time narrow the discount fully to what they believe is a fair discount for their holding structure.
All right. As expected, the questions on Naspers and Process are flying in. So we've got another question here. Has the market overreacted today considering Tencent price is going to tumble downwards after this news? The proceeds from the sale will be much lesser than expected now. Ashraf?
I don't necessarily think so. In fact, Tencent was up in Hong Kong this morning, and Alibaba and Tencent are trading higher in New York as we speak. So I don't think it's going to have a significant impact, and I believe management will be, you know, very methodical in the way that they offload the shares. It's not going to be a dump. It's going to be a steady leakage into the market. And if you look at the market cap of Tencent, then it's not going to be significant if they do it over a period of 12 to 24 months.
Willem, I saw you shaking your head there. I think also at some point I checked Tencent was trading, I think, over 2% lower.
Down, yeah. I'm not sure if Ashraf was playing some golf today, but it definitely didn't close up either in Hong Kong or in the US.
Yeah, your thoughts? I mean, do you think the market overreacted today? What do you think of that impact?
So the shares weren't up today, but I agree. I don't think the impact is large on Tencent at all. Again, this has been thought through properly. So management indicated that they plan on selling between 3% and 5% of daily liquidity in Hong Kong on Tencent. So that should be between 400 and 650 million Rand, which is only 3% to 5% for Tencent, but would be maybe 50 to 100% if they were to do the full amount daily for Naspers and Process. So the effect would be skewed heavily towards increasing Process and Naspers share prices versus decreasing Tencent share price. And then the market sort of front runs the idea. So how much will they really sell? I don't think they bought a lot today. Maybe they bought 10% of the Naspers Process volumes and the shares moved 20%. If this happens again, the discount's narrowed. So I think sort of just the change in sentiment and the change in sort of direction from management has been enough to almost narrow the discount by itself. So all in all, I don't think the effect would be negative. And I think the share prices have underreacted. I think there's still a lot of upside, at least I'd say 10%. Upside in the discount from here.
Technical question coming through on Process and Naspers. So it's got two parts. Ashraf, I'll give you the first part, and Willem, I'll give you the second. Kindly ask your panelists about the shares cross holdings between Process and Naspers and explain the difference amongst ordinary N shares, ordinary shares B, and ordinary shares.
No, you're asking for a masterclass in shareholding, and I don't think we've got the airtime for it. Just very very quickly, yes, there is a cross holding between Process and Naspers, both trade at significant discounts. There was a view that the Process shares would unlock value within Naspers. That didn't quite happen. And with respect to N shares, N shares have limited voting rights, whereas ordinary shares have normal voting rights. And the Naspers ordinary shares are not listed on the JSE.
Yeah. All right.
So that's just a
All right. Thank you for kind of simplifying that for us. Also, on the same question, also the difference between dividends and capital repayment. Willem.
Sure. So just to quickly add on to Ashraf, because I think it summarizes, I'm also not going to explain it. But when it comes down to the underlying economic interest, Prosus has 58% and Naspers, oh, yeah, and Naspers has, I'm lying, sorry, it's 58 and 42. Yeah. So that's the split, if you just want to know sort of how much they own, because the cross-holding is very complicated.
Yeah.
But then, and then the voting rights was completely correct for the ENS versus the A-Kloshesh. And then in terms of capital versus dividend, it comes down to taxes. I think from the company side, I don't think they mind that much, but dividends get a withholding tax and capital repayments generally get a capital gains tax. So that's the same sort of question between a buyback and a dividend.
Yeah.
So it depends on the tax structure of the investor, which you'd prefer. But ultimately, from a company side, it doesn't matter. For you, it's just your personal income tax sort of calc.
All right, before we move on to more questions, I actually want to go into the results. So still under pressure there. They're also talking about slower growth coming out of Tencent, and also the other businesses are still continuing to make losses. Ashraf, your take on the performance?
You know, the Naspers was very, very lucky to invest in Tencent at the time that they did. I don't think the market or investors should expect a repeat of Tencent anytime soon. It is, in my view, a private equity media fund that invests globally. Yes, they did try to buy into a food delivery service, which was unsuccessful, and I think it was a good thing they missed out, because that would have destroyed more value in the NAV. But, you know, to me, at the end of the day, they need to find opportunities to replace Tencent. The sale of their Flipkart interest in India, I think it was last year, is an indication of the types of deals that they can do with their underlying investments. But it's going to be a slow grind, so you can't expect Naspers to repeat its historic performance.
Yeah. Willem, your take on the other businesses, because I guess the main concern is when they will actually get to a point of profitability. You look at, for example, Takealot, that's still making a loss, and then you have Amazon that's now going to be coming into the South African landscape. So how are you looking at, you know, that slow grind to getting to profitability for the other businesses?
Yeah, so I think if you look at core headline earnings per share, which I think is the right measure, it's a very simple few businesses that actually make it in there that they disclose. So Tencent's easy. Then you've got VK, which used to be Mail.ru, which is unfortunately loss-making. Mm-hmm. You've got Delivery Hero, which I think is also loss-making, but at a constant rate, so not sort of further widening losses, just constant losses. And then you've got what they label the investee portfolio, which has... In today's results, I think about half its losses compared to a year ago. So looking at that, I mean, it's such a wide array of investments. So I'm going to try and sum them up into segments. There's e-tail, so sort of electronic retail, where Takealot would fit in, but that's only in Naspers. And then there's food delivery, things like Delivery Hero and iFood and Moveal. Then the place where I think the value unlock, which Ashraf sort of alludes to, what are they going to replace Tencent with? I'm not saying they're going to, but I think the edtech space is very interesting.
Okay.
Companies like Udemy and a similar web, things like that does make sense. Sort of decentralized learning as the world develops. Every kid or every student doesn't need to go to university or a classroom. If you just need a specific skill, you can use it for that. I think the biggest problem, and I think that's what Ashraf is trying to say, is that this might be the beginning of the end for Naspers in South Africa. I think people are very happy with the value unlock, but this might be sort of the value unlock, and then we lose the largest sort of grouped stock on the JSE. So I think that's the fear going forward. But in the short to medium term, we'll finally sort of unlock all the value that's been stuck through Tencent and through Naspers and Prosus in the listing on the JSE.
There's the G7 summit taking place, and the leaders there have agreed on a ban on Russian gold imports. I mean, this is a big moneymaker for Russia. It is the world's second largest producer of gold, accounting for 10% of output in the world. Willem, can we expect our gold producers to benefit from this move in any way?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's a very simple calc, supply versus demand, and supply is going to be curtailed. It'll be interesting to see what Russia does with the gold. If they just sort of funnel it to a market that's prepared to buy it and that comes out of the demand for our market, it would be net neutral. But I think, honestly, the gold price should benefit, and that should benefit our local gold miners as well.
Ashraf, would you be getting into JSE listed gold stocks right now if you're not already in?
No, I wouldn't, and I'll tell you why. Because the Indians were rather wily buying cheap Russian oil, and since they the biggest buyers of gold, my expectation is they're going to ask for a discount on Russian gold now. So that to me is what will play out. The G7's trying to force Russia into a corner. They tried it with oil, and yet Russia's still able to sell its oil as well as its gas. So I can't see our miners benefiting materially from it, but I think there will be a marginal benefit, as there is a marginal benefit now for our coal producers.
All right, different views there. There's actually a question from a viewer. In light of current macroeconomic conditions, why are gold stocks getting beaten down? Is it based on the overall sell-off with equities? And if we are to go into a recession, how would gold stocks fare? Willem?
Yeah, so that's a very fair question. I think it comes down, commodity companies are fairly simple. It's generally the top line is one commodity like gold, and the cost is another commodity like diesel. And I think if you look at oil prices versus gold prices, unfortunately gold miners are in a net negative this year. So in a recession, it becomes quite interesting because gold is supposed to be an inflation hedge, and long term it is. It's fundamentally true. But if a recession occurs due to rising interest rates, people are going to cut their gold exposure and they're going to put it in bonds. So unfortunately, no, I don't think they're a great recession hedge, especially gold miners. They're oftentimes poorly run and marginal, which means sort of if one thing goes wrong, oil prices go up 10% too much, or there's a strike, or they have to dig deeper, whatever the cost or the reason, it's very easy for a gold miner to not capitalize on high gold prices, and lower gold prices, they just suffer regardless. So unfortunately not, but that's an explanation of why gold miners are under pressure so far.
All right. Sticking to commodities, there's a question here. What does the panel think of Sibanye? Ashraf, I think we've largely heard of very good news and analysis on Sibanye. How bullish are you on Sibanye?
Look, I think it's the better of the South African gold and platinum stocks, along with the Gold Fields. They've sorted out their wage issues. My concern for most South African miners, as Willem alluded to, is the higher input cost, and the fact that our gold miners are largely marginal producers, if you're looking at South Africa specifically. So I'm not particularly excited by them. If we get a pickup in the gold price to 1950, yes, then it's a very good period for them, and they'll produce significant amount of cash. It's what the management teams do with that cash, which is critical, and the preference as an investor is that they pay your dividend.
Willem, what's your magnifying glass saying about Sibanye?
Yeah, so I agree completely. I think it's by far the best run. I think the team there has done sort of acquisitions that actually created value rather than destroying value. And at least it's a mix between platinum and gold. Unfortunately, I'm a bit sort of downbeat on commodities lately. I think commodities are late cycle, and they've done incredibly well all over the board. I mean, from hard industrial metals like copper and iron ore to gold, platinum, everything's done incredibly well. And I think you have to take sort of a top-down macro view and sort of just look at the average consumer and sort of the supply of money, and realize that this is a party that's been going on for a very long time, and I think you're sort of joining a bit too late. So my view is neutral across the sector, and therefore neutral on Sibanye.
From same viewer, there's also a question on Purple Group, the panel's view on Purple Group. Ashraf?
It really, I mean, the story for Purple is about easy equities and the amount of trade that's going through there. My concern is that they had a good period during the pandemic, latter part of the pandemic, and into early this year. I think that we're going to see a slowdown in trading volumes, and that will put a cap on their earnings growth. I do know some people who advocate that they've had significant client growth, but I just can't see households trading on easy equities as regularly as they did during the pandemic. People are starting to focus back on their jobs, and with a tough economy, there's very little free cash floating around.
Yeah, so Ashraf, we're not really sure about the future growth of the company. Willem, on your side?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very negative, the future growth. If you look at sort of the retail investors' sort of pool of money over the last year and a half, I think maybe 60, 70% of that's been wiped out. So that brings trading volumes down by 60 to 70% just regardless. And then it's a business with really low barriers to entry. So Standard Bank launched Shift. So why do I need to use easy equities? You know, it's not like they have any sort of moat around them. So ultimately, I agree. If you look at globally, if you look at something like Robinhood or some of the sort of Bitcoin exchanges that listed, they all sort of focus on the same space and they've all done terribly. So I think the future is sort of written on the wall. We'll see at the next results period.
There's a comment here from a viewer. Some analysts are way too negative on China and Chinese equities. Ashraf, do you think that the negativity on China is overdone and that there's way more upside than there are challenges?
I do think that it is overdone, but it needs a catalyst to, to cause the markets to rally. It can't just be valuations. And I'm talking in the short term. I think over time, sure. But I don't think the big investors will move into China because they will see risk up until the People's Congress. And if Xi Jinping wins it hands down and he gets greater control, then those investors will actually sit back and wait to see the growth numbers coming through from Chinese corporates.
All right, let's go into we did have results today coming out of PPC. There are really a lot of challenges in the operating environment in Zimbabwe, although there is quite a lot of demand. And also, they're saying that they're not seeing a significant boost from the South African government's infrastructure program. Willem, what's your take on PPC as an investment case?
Yeah, so I think they at least warned us with the trading statement last week. So today was less of a shock. It's tough. It's so like you have to be honest and realistic. And I think they have to sell cement in sort of sub-Saharan Africa or not even, SADC. And that growth needs to come from somewhere. And it's very hard to find out why. So I don't like the idea of a cement company, and I don't think you can sort of override. Again, it's a similar story, but you can't override the economics or the macroeconomics of the countries in which they operate. No matter how well they perform, I think that, again, sort of, it's not something, it's out of their control, and I think it's fairly negative going forward.
All right, let's go into more questions. I want to buy Kaap Agri and want to hold it for long term plus minus 10 years. I want the panel's thoughts on the company. Kaap Agri, Ashraf?
Well, they sell into the farming market. We know that the demand for food is there, etc. But Kaap Agri's track record has not been that great. If you're taking a view and you're just wanting to benefit from rising food costs, you're better off buying a food commodities ETF.
All right. Another question. Willem, do you look at core potash? There's a question here. Very exciting news around with Align Research recommending at around R2. What's the panel view on the junior miner?
Yeah, so I don't cover it specifically, but what it is a play on fertilizers globally. And I think that is a positive thing. I agree completely with buying it, and I'm assuming that's what whoever analyzed it came up with. Ukraine was the world's breadbasket, and Russia was the world's fertilizer producer, and that's sort of been cut off. So there are very few places. I know Anglo American bought a fertilizer company also doing potash in the year or two ago, and then Core Potash. So, like Ashraf says, it's similar to buying a food ETF, if you like, if you believe in sort of the Ukraine war, really would be the, I think, the driving factor. If you think that's going to last longer, I agree, it's a good buy.
All right, Ashraf, what do you think is a good buy at the moment? Your stock pick for tonight?
So my stock pick is Equitas. It's down 23% from its 12-month high, giving you a dividend yield of just over 9.2%, and 50% of the revenue is generated out of the UK and Europe. So, for an industrial REIT, I think it's very attractive at these levels. And they do have long-term leases. I mean, the weighted average lease is well above 8 years.
All right, and what are you most bullish on tonight, Willem? Stock pick?
Process. So I picked it, I don't know, a month ago, and I'm very proud of that. And I think just finally, the amount of negative sentiment in Prosus has finally been proven wrong. And it's taken a while, and I think it's been an incredibly trying process. For process, a bit of alliteration there. It's finally happened, and this is it. I think this is the moment we've all been waiting for. I think long term, it's fairly sad. We're going to lose our only exposure on the JSE to China Tech, and it's 15 to 20% of everyone's pension fund. But I think in the next 3 to 6 months, you're going to see a truly significant, and I'm speaking maybe R1 trillion for the JSE unlock. And I think that is something that you want to be part of. And it's only just started today. So it's an easy buy. It's sort of backed up technically. You don't have to think about forecasts or anything like that. It's written in black and white in a legal document, and it's going to happen. So an easy pick tonight, process.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your insights tonight. Thanks to my guests, Willem Oldewage from Nitrogen Fund Managers and independent analyst Ashraf Mohammed. Stockwatch is back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.